my heart. It feels like an alligator.
Shades, what's wrong with you, man?
Do you know that tub of zombie takeout that I was saving?
Oh, no, no, no!
What's up? Welcome to episode 36 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And this week, another pick from Scotto that I hadn't seen until today.
Hey.
Well, no, your track record has been kind of all over the place. You know,
you had
They Call Me Bruce, which in my opinion was the worst movie we've done. I know it's in your bottom three, probably.
You know what? I think Battlefield Earth would have been a great movie if the Korean dude actually had starred in that from the Coffee Bruce.
No. Hey, now, you're the one who called the moratorium on the Battlefield Earth references. But on the positive side, you also picked Hawk the Slayer. So.
Hawk the Slayer. I mean, that was
brilliant.
Landmark movie in my life. I knew that was going to be cheesy and great at the same time. Mm.
This one's somewhere between.
Yeah.
Which side it leans to, I'll get to.
Yeah.
But before we do that, it's time for Scotto's impromptu plot summary. We have a couple of sponsors. You want to take one? You want to take the first one?
Brought to you by Reno's Radiation-Free Reindeer Steaks.
And Ferial Electronics, makers of the Mark 13 Cyborg. When you absolutely positively have to kill every motherfucker in the world, it's Ferial Electronics. Accept no substitutes.
Or it's crap. Okay, maybe it's not Scottish.
No.
All right, for this movie, plot summary. Did this thing have a plot?
Sort of, I think.
Well, all right, so we begin with... pretty much where the Mad Max Thunderdome movie left off, right?
Just think of every post-apocalyptic sci-fi film you've ever seen.
Dude wandering in the desert, soundtrack that, I mean, a more synthesized version of the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme.
Pretty much.
I mean, and he's wandering in the desert. He picks up... pretty much the Terminator. It's in pieces. It's not, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's, you know, the exoskeleton or endoskeleton thing that he was underneath. It was in pieces. And he sells it to another junk merchant or whatever. And the junk merchant decides to bring home the Terminator to his girlfriend who, you know, sculptures some, you know... Mm-hmm. Modern art.
She does that whole metal sculpture thing, kind of like Nick from Family Ties.
Right. Why this would be popular in a post-apocalyptic world where everything else looks like that anyway? I don't know. But that's what she's doing. So she takes the skull from this thing, gives it a pretty cool American flag motif, and sticks it up on the wall. Well, the problem is, of course, the Terminator can rebuild it and then repair itself.
Yeah.
So, using the sunlight, because it was buried before this, it starts picking up steam, and it's an awesome killer, except when it goes up against an art chick and a Frankie Says guy. Then, it's not so much of a good killer.
Well, it's actually, I think they got, I think science kind of ripped this off because it's one weakness, water.
I was going to get to that. That was going to be a kind of a, well, anyway. To finish up the impromptu plot summary, the Terminator rebuilds itself in the apartment and hilarity ensues.
Yes. Also, just a little side note with the plot. The way it kills, it injects its victim with an hallucinogenic poison, which lends itself to one of the more interesting moments in the movie.
That is a nice touch, I thought. That was a nice touch. the robot injects hallucinogens into its victims.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos.
Now, are we done with the plot summary?
Yeah.
Now, the guy at the beginning, who only appears at the beginning and the end, which is weird. You think he's going to be crucial, and that's it. He finds it surrounded by barbed wire with some sign. Now, one would think this was not something you would want to scavenge.
Well, who knows? That dude is like was the lead singer of a band back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Fields of Nephilim.
Oh, that real? Oh, literally, he was. Okay.
Yeah, it was Carl McCoy.
Ah. I thought it was a joke.
No, that was really. Music is really what saves this movie, honestly.
Uh-huh. Although, and having been, you know, we were both in radio in the 90s, we were both into that whole scene.
Right.
There was one part that I'm sure you found just as amusing as I did, on the just, you know, continuing with the music angle.
Sure.
She's flipping around television. You hear Stigmata by Ministry, which
right.
I haven't heard in years. I forgot how much I love that song.
Yeah.
But you see Gwar.
Right, right. They were showing Gwar as the band playing Stigmata for some reason. Why they couldn't have both Gwar and Ministry on the soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
beyond me.
Well, of the two, I mean, I'd prefer Ministry.
Well, of course. Of course. But why they couldn't have both in the soundtrack, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it was the first time I'd ever heard Ministry.
Ah.
Maybe I might have heard them on 120 Minutes... like a year or so before, but, you know, you know, it's the first time I remember going, wow, what is that? And, you know, this was right before Psalm 69 came out, like a year or two ahead. Well,
mm-hmm.
actually, no, we saw this, I think it was 91,
okay.
you know, on video after, you know,
yeah.
the main theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, Psalm 69 came out.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
Now back to our lead singer scavenger guy.
Yes,
he said he found it. Did you notice where he said he found the skeleton or the robot? I should say.
Just call it the Terminator because that's really what it was.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Come on.
Where did you notice? Did that stick out? Where in the desert he found the Terminator?
No, it really didn't. Honestly,
the Dune Sea.
Oh.
For those not keeping up, Star Wars reference.
Right. Well, since you brought up Star Wars, did you recognize someone in this movie?
No.
What was his name again?
No one related to Star Wars, anyway.
Lincoln Weinberg.
Yeah. What was the actor's name? I have it here.
William Hootkins.
Wait.
A.K.A.
Porkins?
Mr. Red Six.
Porkins. I knew the name rang a bell. Wow.
Yes. They had an honest-to-goodness X-Wing fighter pilot. Pretty much a peeping Tom.
Really. An absolute perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a red shirt.
Yes. Yes.
Which,
a
I mean,
Hawaiian red shirt, I think.
Well, yeah. And I guess you're going to have a red shirt if you want it to be somebody you already hate.
He kind of looked like the comic book owner shop.
A little bit, yeah, yeah. He was that typical greasy, fat, pervy guy. Also,
worst ripoff ever. His dying words.
Speaking of cast, there were a couple of interesting cameos.
Yes.
Lemmy as a boat taxi driver.
Lemmy is good in anything, man.
Yes, Lemmy is. It's Lemmy. Bit of trivia related to Mr. Kilmeister. For his appearance as the cabbie, Lemmy was equipped with a bottle of scotch and a genuine Magnum revolver. He emptied the bottle and drew the gun out from his shoulder holster. It slipped out of his hand and sank into the river. Divers were sent in to recover it, but they were unsuccessful. I'm assuming he did the two in that order, just because it's more amusing.
Of course.
And Iggy's character. Did he not remind you of the DJ from the Warriors?
You know, that is, you know, this movie really, one of the things this movie really needed was more Iggy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he just kind of disappeared for the majority of the second half of it.
Well, he's got a few bits at the beginning and then at the very end, and that's it.
Right. I mean, the Warriors, you're right, they had the DJ there, and
Who
he
was
was taking
functioning as
that
Basil
ball.
Exposition, which is what
Exactly.
Iggy was doing at the beginning,
Right.
kind of
Not
giving you some
bad.
background on the world, and he did well.
Right. And I think they needed just a few more spice, you know, kind of like Steven Wright in Reservoir Dogs.
Yes.
You know, you love that stuff. And this, you know, of course, was about, you know, 5 years before 4 years before Reservoir Dogs, or no, actually, no, a couple of years. That was Pulp Fiction 94. So yeah, this would be a couple of years before Reservoir Dogs. So yeah.
Now, of course, there is one, well, sort of name. He was a name in the movie. Dylan McDermott. Apparently, he started here. I think he was on one of those Law and Order shows for a while. Doesn't really do much anymore.
Before this, I don't think he really did anything.
Well, that's why
No.
I figured this is where he probably one of his first, if not his first movie.
I mean, he had like Twister and Steel Magnolias. He kind of did Hamburger Hill, but I don't think he had
A lead.
huge parts in those.
Yeah.
And then after this, I don't think he really turned up until Ally McBeal.
Was that it? Okay. I
Yeah.
thought he was in one of the Law and Order shows or one of I knew it was a courtroom show, so I was close.
Yeah, The Practice.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, The Practice was his, you know. But man, what a horrible acting job. You know, I so much wanted to like this movie too, going in, and had such high expectations for it. But Dylan McDermott and Stacey Travis.
She was there to look. Stacey Travis was there to look good. I think the best performance, aside from Iggy, was probably William Hookins. I bought Perkins as the creepy perv.
Yeah, he did. You know, Shades wasn't all that
Okay,
bad.
okay. We're getting to Shades. Okay, I was holding off on this. Okay, the performance wasn't bad, aside from those, couple of the scenes when they're going to her apartment really read like that cheesy dialogue went right before the song in a musical. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah, I've been watching her. Yeah, that was I yeah, his dialogue, the lines written for him in some of those scenes were pretty uncomfortable, but
But the performance wasn't bad. I just can't figure out why he was in the movie.
yes. He what was his point? I mean, I think he was there just to add the insanity to the movie, because he sort of did it, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
Like,
we used one of his scenes as the intro, so obviously he served a
right,
purpose.
that was like that was the height of craziness, where you know you
Yeah.
think, oh, you know, he's gonna help out because he's right there and he's always wanted to be there for her,
And
and
he's
no, he's
tripping.
there here tripping. He just like you didn't see that one coming.
True.
So. And then the craziness towards the you know when you think she's dead,
Yeah.
the
There's that I had to re because I'll be honest, I played a lot of solitaire during this movie. But so, and I missed why that was all happening, so I just kind of went back and it just got, it went very Terry Gilliam, but not in a good way.
It was almost like they might be giants. It was almost
And like,
like a, there she is, she's back to life,
well,
and they're fighting with her not to get back up, and
but just before that, when he thinks she's dead,
yeah.
I couldn't figure out why he was sudden. Why? What exactly was happening there?
Oh, the part
I
with like the leeches and stuff and the
yeah, I
cutting
had
of
to
the.
rewatch it, and then I noticed that that Mark 13 injected him. Okay,
Yes.
then it made sense. He was tripping.
Right.
But that really threw me for a loop at first.
Yes. That whole sequence is just what?
Which I think says a lot about the movie. There's a lot that's just what?
Well,
Because it starts off as your typical cheesy post-apocalyptic sci-fi movie. I love those movies, as bad as they are. I was prepared to love it. Then about halfway through, it gets very Cinemax.
The movie has a serious identity problem.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it trying to do? Was it trying to be a slasher movie? It a thriller without really any thrills? Was it trying to be thought-provoking, but it really didn't provoke any new thoughts?
Well, that's the thing, is as of the shower scene, it gets very Cinemax for a while.
Yeah.
And then it tries to do the whole creepy, tense, the robot is waking up thing. But instead of creepy, it just ends up meandering.
Right.
There's no tension when it's supposed to be tense.
None whatsoever. And why this thing that's an assault machine, it's supposed to be a combat, cyborg, can't handle the art chick.
Yeah.
They're in the apartment together. He's pretty much right in front of her. They can't quite go, I don't know what to do. It uses infrared, so I'll go in the refrigerator. And it can kind of see some glimpses, but it just doesn't know what to do. It just kind of stands there.
It's not a smart robot.
Right. Wow. Oh, the doorbell rang.
Yeah, that got me. It got distracted by the doorbell.
Right. I better go and hide. Wait, why? You're a killer. Just waste the chick right there, kill whoever's at the door, and then go about your merry, genocidal way.
Right.
Between him and the Frankie, her and the Frankie Says guy, it was no match for them. Could take out the Marine and stuff. No problem there. But don't go messing with the art chick or the Frankie Says guy.
Yeah. And what I realized, and the shower sex scene made me realize, well, that seemed like something out of Heavy Metal to me.
Right. It did. Yeah, it did remind me a lot of Heavy Metal.
And I think this entire movie could very well be condensed down and would have been a great segment in Heavy Metal.
Actually, movie
like that, because if it were in Heavy Metal, the cyborg would have had to have been powered by the Lochnar. But a similar kind of movie.
I can't remember if I did my my cartoon expectation thing back then. But if you made this movie a cartoon, and cartoons have lower expectations in performance, they'd be calling this genius.
True.
If this were a cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it had no idea what it wanted to do, really. I mean, and, some of these, the robot effects are pretty cool, too. But, you make this as a cartoon with the insane characters and the wacky,
Oh, would have been great. You're absolutely right. It would have been hailed as a work of genius if it was a cartoon.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
But unfortunately, they didn't do that.
Yeah. And you could have had somebody voicing better than Dylan McDermott. Was that an accent he was trying to do?
Was sort of variably British in general.
Well, right. And he was just kind of out there.
Because it was made by a British company, but there were a lot of Americans.
He's trying to be a tough guy.
Thankfully, he doesn't get much work anymore. Now, although, and this is just a bit of trivia that could have led to a better movie, I think. Richard Stanley, the director, originally wanted Bill Paxton to play Mo.
I could see that.
And Paxton was enthusiastic about the script, but Miramax and Palace Pictures did not know anything about him, so they didn't contact his agent. Paxton signed on for Navy SEALs instead. A little foreshadowing for next week.
Wow, you have something planned for next week already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did Navy SEALs instead of this. I think Paxton would have been better.
Well, I think we've got something to talk about after this, about next week.
Perhaps. Oh, also, one more last bit of trivia.
Sure.
Porkins improvised William Hootkins.
Porkins.
From now on, known as Porkins.
Of course, Red Six.
Improvised a lot of his foulest and most obscene lines. Which is really just kind of disturbing, if that just came off the top of his head.
That's awesome. Yeah, so this is such a quirky movie. It almost does make you want to see it again, just like make heads or tails of what's going on.
I kind of don't want to sit through it again, but I kind of do just to wrap my head around it.
And it's funny because, you know, I remember seeing this way back when, and, you know, and then as I'm watching it, I'm going, why don't I remember a lot of this? And it was starting to come back to me, you fell asleep during that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You were lucky that time.
Because, you know, it starts out, you're really like going, well, what's the conflict? Where's the problem? You see they're getting, I mean, is this thing just going to kill them and go on? And, you know, they're going to have to somehow maintain this somewhere. And then when you realize it can't leave the apartment for some reason. Is this an SNL skit? It's this killer cyborg machine from, you know, the military. But, well, the apartment security system has it kind of maintained, so they can't...
And somehow she's able to hack it.
Yes!
That I love. Art chick, who apparently, you know, not particularly tech-savvy, at least not more than anybody else in that time, somehow hacks the robot.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot that just didn't make sense. You didn't know where it wanted to go, whether it was trying to be it was trying to be heavy-handed, but at the same time it was trying to be unemotional and detached, which...
You can't really do both. You
can't do both. And, you know, it was trying to be this slasher movie and I'm not sure what else. But it tried to throw in as much as humanly possible into the movie.
Yeah.
Now, I guess it was, I've said enough about the movie itself. But a remake, I think the Bill Paxton thing is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, there was, before we get to remakes, Richard Stanley has written a sequel.
I have heard of that.
Hardware 2 Ground Zero, the strip. The script was released to Reed in December 2009, but the film has yet to enter production. Filming has been slowed because the permissions on the first part, which is based on the script, is still unresolved. Don't bother. Please, don't bother.
Yeah, I don't know about a sequel.
A remake could be fun.
A
with
remake
the director.
Could be very fun. I think this movie is begging for a remake.
Yeah.
Well, you need to rewrite it a bit, too, and make it
yes.
coherent.
Cut Shays. Is William Hookinson alive?
Sadly he's passed.
Unfortunate.
You have to keep Shades, I think, because he kind of adds some much needed spice to this movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know who I could see playing Shades? I don't watch SNL much anymore, but I think his name is Andy Samberg.
Wouldn't it be great to just have, like, comedians, you know, like, Andy Dick is Mo, and...
I'm kind of seeing Steve Buscemi as,
Chris Kattan as Shades.
Oh, God. In all seriousness, I'm kind of seeing, Porkin's role. What's the character's name?
Jack Black?
I was actually seeing Steve Buscemi in that part.
Or the other dude from Tenacious D.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yes. Kyle Gass. Yes. Okay. Forget Buscemi. Gass. Kyle Gass is perfect for him.
And naturally, Hopkins as the girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think that's about it for our remake. Remake, of course, it has to be a cartoon.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
This was a comic originally.
Yeah. So, animated would have been a much smoother transition, I think.
Yeah. I think this works so much better as a cartoon than a real movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Sequel, yeah, I don't think we need to bother with that.
No.
And, does that leave us with brains?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I got a couple things more in my notes, but I'm gonna skip them. Let's just go to brains.
Sure.
Just a comment. Just a couple of comments. As good as some of the soundtrack was, you know, the Ministry and the PIL and all that.
Yeah.
The score had all the subtlety of a baseball bat. One
Yeah.
of the worst scores I have ever heard in a movie.
It was very cheesy, original Terminator.
Also, there was an incredible bit of foreshadowing.
Well, yeah, they.
The two doormen, the two guards in the building. I don't know exactly sure what they were. They're playing chess, and one of them, you know, the older guard beats the younger one, and he explains that what he did was how they used to beat computers. And he said, "Machines don't understand sacrifice." Obvious foreshadowing. Sort of, because that's not what ended up, you know, killing him. But it was, you know, you knew somebody was going to sacrifice themselves.
Well, did anybody really sacrifice themselves in this movie, though?
Mo, sort of, while he was tripping.
Well, yeah, but,
But he was already dying, so it's
yeah.
debatable. Yeah.
But of course, the thing that irks me more than anything else about this movie. Water? Are you kidding me?
That was my issue with Signs, and it's my issue with this again. Yeah, you would think that they would have figured that one thing out. The thing, I mean, granted, it's post-apocalyptic and it's mostly desert, but still, there's enough water around. You would think that they would make it waterproof.
Water. Water. Somebody paid to write someone a script, and they came up with water. I mean, you look at that 50 years ago, genius! Wow, you know, I mean, it's
Yeah.
something we take for granted, yet it could be destructive to another species. Even in 1990, what?
And we're not even talking about aliens, because okay, aliens, you could buy it because maybe they don't have H2O on their planet.
Right, you know,
This is
not a
a.
common element in their planet. So yeah, so Signs, you could almost forgive that.
But this thing was made by the military to go into various locations and kill people. They didn't expect it to find water there. I like how we went through sequels and remakes and just circled right back around to criticizing the movie.
Well, this leads up to our brains, I
Yeah.
think.
Just because I do. There were moments I liked, and, you know, I was all in at the beginning, and, you know, I do want to see it again to see if I can make some sense of it. I'm going to go 3.
Yeah, you know, I mean, on its own, this is like a two and a half brain movie, but it had so much, you know, quirkiness to it with Shades and honestly, the soundtrack.
Yeah. That's a half a point alone.
It had Ministry, it had Gore. So I am giving it 3 as well, actually. Whether
Okay.
I'd recommend somebody seeing it,
Yeah,
well, it depends on what you're looking for.
I think it's one of those everybody should see it once.
Yeah.
And probably only once.
Well, don't go into it with the high expectations that
Yeah,
I
well,
did.
yeah, that's true. I also was expecting a bit more because I am a fan of the cheesy, you know, post-apocalyptic sci-fi, and I was expecting something along those lines, and no.
Well, right. This was, I mean, this was better than Species,
Oh God, yes.
but not as good as Split Second.
No.
So when you take your, you know, Terminator Alien rip-offs or
Yeah, okay.
knockoffs, which they are kind of, they're close to the same genre.
Split second I can see. Maybe, yeah, I can see maybe Terminator 2.
Well, yeah.
Or you mean Species, sorry. Terminator, it is Terminator.
Yeah. So, you know, this would rate somewhere
In
along
the
the
middle.
mediocre. Yeah.
I'd say a little closer to Species.
Yeah. Well, no. Species is much worse.
Well, no, I'm saying closer to Species than Split Second.
Yeah.
In that continuum, it's closer to Species. Because I mean, we loved Split Second, but
Yeah.
so does that do it?
I think that does. What have we learned today?
Oh, yes, I almost forgot the segment.
That's what I'm here for.
I learned that Dylan McDermott, who I've almost three times now called another name, really can't act. I was unprepared for that.
I'm never prepared for this, usually. I'm not prepared right now, as a matter of fact. I want to go back and reevaluate Natasha and Trisha's performance because it doesn't seem as bad compared to some of them.
No. And that is definitely one to grow on.
Yes, it is.
So, next week, I guess we're not telling them what we're doing next week. We want to surprise them.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious what we're doing next week.
Yeah,
but
it is episode 37, that's all we're telling you.
Yeah. Okay.
And I dropped the hint earlier.
When you were talking about Navy SEALs, though, I was like, what?
Nah.
That has nothing to do with what we're doing next week in episode 37. Dutch, wink. No.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com. You got the episode description, album art, of course, the episode, all the other good stuff that I talk about every week that I'm not going to bother going through right now.
37. Should we do the sign off, Uncle John?
I was just waiting for another reference. Something about lasagna, perhaps. Until then,
oh,
always
it's gonna
remember,
be great.
Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are. 37. I better go and hide. Wait, why? You're a killer. Just waste the chick right there, kill whoever's at the door, and then go about your merry, genocidal way.